What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that gave up consulting its ethics advisor a long time ago. This week, playoff finals confirmed. Nostalgia aficionados rejoice, for 'tis the town of Luton versus the city of Coventry for a place in the Prem. In League One, self-raising Lazarus Darren Moore sets up the Darren Moore derby, and Carlisle and Stockport battle it out to become League Two's Northern Stars / get promoted. Plus, we'll round up the big news and hear from an EFL icon. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we know then, gang, who's going to be taking part in the playoff finals this weekend after a suitably dramatic round of second leg fixtures. Here to talk it all through with me, Matt Davis Adams. Adrian Clark, good morning.
Good morning.
And Sam Parkin's back with us too. How are you doing, Sam?
Very good, Matthew. Good morning, both.
Right, I thought as a little starter for 10, we could debate who can consider themselves most unlucky not to be in the final. Could be a player, could be a team, could be a manager. Clarkie, you've been at plenty of these playoff games. Who did your heart go out to when the scenes at the final whistle were of one half celebrating and another down on their knees commiserating?
Well, I had to feel for Peterborough. Yeah, we'll get more into the craziness, the drama of that one in a bit, but yeah, I mean they were at Wembley, weren't they? And it was really heartbreaking for them, I guess, especially the fact that they were the first ones to score in extra time as well. So they got their noses back in front, and then they still couldn't go on and seal the deal. I think it was Darren Ferguson that I felt sorry for, because I think he'd done such a good job towards the end of the season. And really, I didn't put it down to tactics. The people at Posh, some of the fans, might look at it and say, oh, did he get it wrong in the second leg? And maybe he did to some degree, but really, that was the will of Sheffield Wednesday that overpowered Peterborough. So yeah, my heart went out to them and their supporters, to be honest. Yeah, I'd say they were unlucky.
Actually, Sam, it's easy to feel sorry for every team and every player that didn't make it, isn't it? Because nobody got battered over the two legs. Every game was close. Everybody can feel a bit aggrieved that it didn't quite go their way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'd echo that about Peterborough. Not the exact same circumstances in terms of the gap after the first leg, but it did bring back my sore wounds from my playoff defeat on penalties in League One, when you just can taste it and you're thinking about, tell you exactly what I was thinking about. All my mates that had been to watch me over the years, all my mates I was at school with, I couldn't wait to book that coach to get them all to the Millennium Stadium. And that's what I was thinking about in the last minute of the game of extra time, only to throw it away and then lose on penalties. And that's you're thinking about those celebrations and all that. Obviously focused on the game, I'm not saying that, but you can taste it. So that's sore for Peterborough. And that'll be fascinating how they go next year now. I heard the chairman speak the other day, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of change. He said they're going to go even younger next year. So expect a few exciting talents to be cherry-picked from the National League, so on and so forth. So I feel for them, definitely. Salford, I thought, for a game and a half, were in charge. I thought Stockport came on strong. Last half an hour and extra time was a bit end-to-end, really good fun. But I feel for Salford over the two games. I think they should have been further in front. And I'll give you an individual, just because I love him, and we've spoken about him throughout the season, Tuberakpom. That was pretty moving, I thought, at full-time. He was in floods of tears. What a season he's had. What a player he's been. I thought in flashes he was still good in the two games. Not great in the second leg, but shame for him. And given I've been reading quite a lot about him in the last few days, there may very well be a Premier League team in any case that takes a bit of a punt on him.
Really? Okay, yeah. It just didn't fall for him or Archer, did it, in that semi-final? The run of the ball didn't come their way, and I felt for them, but I think Coventry just about shaded that one over two legs.
When you get a disappointment like this, Adrian, is the most important thing to get out of the country as quickly as possible, go take your holiday and just absolutely be as far away from football as you can for a bit?
I think so, yeah. I think if you can, definitely. Yeah, you've got to sort of park it and just take a little bit of time to grieve, really. I don't like to use that phrase, but it does feel like a loss, because you've got it in your head that you were about to achieve something very special, and then it's taken away, and you can't get that moment back. So, yeah, I think players that have lost out in the playoff semi-finals right across the board will grieve to some degree just for a few weeks. But often the best way to get over things like that is to just get out of the country, forget about football, don't look at the news, don't look at who's playing and who's gone up. Just wipe it.
And it's a difficult predicament for the management the following season, because if you've got the nucleus of the same squad collectively, there can be that hangover. I certainly experienced in my career a little bit different, because we'd lost a number of players after the playoff defeat, and our chances of an immediate return to the playoffs, or even better, to get automatic promotion the following season, was kind of taken away from us, that chance. But I definitely experienced it, because I knew that was our opportunity gone. Just one other quick one. I remember being in Ayia Napa, so my memory's a little bit hazy, forgive me, but seeing Mickey Gray the summer after his penalty miss, and he was very much walking along the beach staring into the horizon.
Oh, no, was he?
Yeah. So and what I like, he had a retro Brazil shirt on. I remember that detail really clearly. But yeah, he was obviously away with his mates, but not fully embraced in Maranello's or whatever the square was called at Clarkey. I'm sure you remember that.
It's been brilliant, I've got to say, to be able to rubberneck on people's joy and despair in the playoffs this time around from the safety of having achieved it last season from a Forest perspective. All right, next we're going to be joined by Curtis Davis to look ahead to the Championship playoff final. But first, how about this? Our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, next today we'll look ahead to the Championship playoff final.
Last couple of years we finished in the top six. We're now in the playoff final. We finished third in the league this year. There's some really talented players here. And what we try and do is play to our players' strengths, and that's what I've tried to do since I've come in. We want them to be brave. We believe in them completely, and we want them to play an aggressive front-footed attacking style. And you know, we've got to use our strengths. We have to.
I've learned a lot recently, especially about how much stuff like this means to this club. You know, I was at an awards the other day. I was speaking to a 90-year-old fan who's been coming here for 66 years. So, you know, it's a special moment for this football club. I hope you enjoy that one tonight.
Chief lifting that ball forward. Stefan is away from his goal, and this is a chance for Jokeres. And now it's Harmer.
So it is Coventry City versus Luton Town in the Championship playoff final this coming Saturday at Wembley. Kickoff is at the traditional time of 4:45. We are very pleased to welcome Luton Academy graduate and former Hatters defender Curtis Davis to the pod. Curtis, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad.
Before we talk about the final then, let's talk a bit about you. Obviously, your time at Derby's come to an end, not in the way that you wanted, but you're still in my stepdad's Twitter bio and header picture, so it's not all bad. What's next then? You want to carry on playing, right?
Yeah, I want to do another year. I think if I'd played more last year, I might have reflected at the end of this year and thought I might hang it up. But I think, my mindset is, whilst I feel like I can still play, I want to give it another go and see where I land. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to a new challenge. Obviously, I wish things at Derby ended a little bit better, particularly the way the decision happened against Sheffield Wednesday. But yeah, it is what it is, and I'm just looking forward to a new challenge.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. You should carry on playing because, you know, it was a really good season for you. You just touched on that moment there at the end of the season. Let's get the elephant out of the room here. Yeah. Me and Sam called it as a dive straight away. There's someone with a beard that's presenting this podcast.
A Forest fan, you mean?
Someone with a beard that's presenting this podcast that thought it was a penalty. Well, come on, tell him he's wrong.
All I can say is, the one thing I'll say is, he has dived, yes, but I never ever blame the player because I said ultimately if David McGoldrick, the other end, dives in the 90th minute, we get a penalty to take us into the playoffs. That's on the ref that's made the decision. So I will never blame the player for doing it. I'm not one of those people that ever go at the player. The ref's got to get the decision right. And whilst I don't think it was a penalty regardless, I think even if it is a penalty, he was quick to get his red out. That's what I'm saying. So the red is more upsetting to me, obviously, than the penalty itself, even though I didn't believe it was a penalty. But when we appealed it, the wording of the reasons was even more complex and more it perplexed me even more because I read the words that the first line and it said, whilst we don't believe there was enough contact for a penalty, we don't believe that the referee made an obvious mistake in giving you the red card. Now, for me, if you're telling me it's not a penalty, that means for it not to be a penalty, it means there can't be a red card. It's like you can't have one without the other. So for me, I was just confused after that. But, you know, I think if it's game 23, 24 in the season, I'll maybe get that rescinded. But with what happened and obviously the weight of the game, I think it was a too big a decision not to back the ref.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely wasn't a red card. We can all agree on that. So in terms of you looking for a new club now, how does that work? Is that your agent kind of on the phone to people or are you waiting for the offers to come in? Are you thinking League One again or is it more about the locality of it or the ambitions of the club that you're joining?
I think at my age, I've now played against or played with most of these managers coming through now. So I've got a few friends that I've played with that are managers that I've spoken to personally, but I'm quite relaxed at the moment. I just want to let my agent do his work in the background, maybe dig up stuff that I maybe wouldn't have thought of. And I just want to go on my holiday and enjoy my holiday and then come back and start from there, really. I think ultimately at my age, I'm not going to be asking for the world, which sometimes if you know that you're going to be asking for a lot or whatever, then you're going to be trying to get in first to make sure they've got the budget and stuff like that. But for me, I'm not going to be asking for the world. But I think it's a combination of locality against, you know, you want a project that you're excited by as well. And that project might even be, you know, helping a mate stay in a league. That might be trying to get a promotion. It might be trying to build their younger players and help their younger players through wherever that project is. Once it's presented to me, then I can look at it and I can take everything at its own merits. But I've always said that I'm not sure my wife will be all right with it, but the only club I've wanted to play for him is Leyton Orient, just because it's my hometown team. I've always said that publicly. My mate is the manager, Rishi Wellens, who I played with at Leicester City. So we'll see, but it's convincing my wife more than convincing Richie, I think. So,
looking forward to reading about you bumping into a manager on the beach somewhere and crashing out a deal over a cocktail. That's normally how it works, isn't it? Curtis, we missed each other at Luton, if we can focus on the game at the weekend. Obviously, for me personally, it was a bit of a disaster over 3 years, given everything that went on at the club upstairs and for me in terms of injuries. But different for you in that you played in a really successful side. Did you have any inkling of what was to follow at the club when you made the move to West Brom in terms of the fall from grace?
No. Obviously, the way football works is mad that we had, I think it was Dave Watson-Challis was the owner before Bill Tomlins, and he was pumping in a lot of money. Joe Kinnear was the manager. Joe wasn't interested in the youth team. You would literally, at that time, because there was no transfer window, you could loan a player for a week. So he would, rather than put a young player into the squad or put a young player into the team, he'd go and loan a player for a week or 2 weeks. Or if someone had a suspension, loan a player for 3 weeks rather than dip into the youth team. So because of all that money, it allowed players, well, young players didn't really get a chance other than, you know, I think it was Matty Taylor and Lee Mansell. And then eventually when Watson-Challis took his money away, Joe left, Mike Newell was in, and we went into administration. Through administration, I actually got my chance, but then I got my chance, got in the team, we did well, blah, blah, blah. But then Bill Tomlin's come and bought the club and you think, oh, okay, the club's going to stabilise again and we're going to build back up to something. I don't know if it's because maybe we got promoted quite early in terms of into that ownership when we won League One in 2004-05 season, but they got greedy, basically. You know, when I left, I was one of the first, obviously, to leave. But, you know, I left for $3 million. I think Kev Foley was something like $2.5 million. Leon Barnett, something similar, $2.5, $2.75 million. Rowan Vine, $3 million. Howie went for $1 million. Nico went for $1 million. I could keep going through the list of all these players. They've got Calvin Andrews got sold to Palace. So all of these players were getting sold for big money. And for Luton Town, that really is big money. And then all of a sudden, you start hearing rumours about, oh, the money's gone. If you can, no, surely not. You can't, because I remember Newley at the time was talking about having to sell Howie for $1 million, and then he was, with all due respect, buying a Drew Talbot and buying him for $150,000. It wasn't adding up. And then obviously, eventually, people call Newley a whistleblower. He was simply stating facts of why he couldn't get the squad going. He couldn't get a tune out of the squad. And then eventually it all came out that the money was going elsewhere into different companies and stuff like that. And unfortunately, that was the downward spiral. But as with every good story, there's been light at the end of the tunnel and we're in the position that we are in now.
Yeah, you must be really thrilled to see how it's turned around and you know, how the club is obviously in really good hands at the moment. And the fact that they face such adversity this season with losing Nathan Jones, who, you know, let's not forget, had become synonymous with Luton and had taken them to a playoff campaign, to get over that and to do so with a guy who'd just been sacked by Watford, it must just be so sweet from a Luton perspective to see how things have gone under Rob Edwards. I mean, you couldn't be any better, really.
Yeah, it definitely is. I think, you know, when Rob first went to Watford, I wasn't sure it was the project for him in terms of, it didn't feel like it married up in terms of Watford's kind of objectives and Rob Edwards, a progressive manager. I didn't see them giving him a 2-year plan as such. I thought maybe a QPR or something at that time might have been better for Rob. Obviously, fortunately for Luton, he did go to Watford, end up getting sacked. Obviously, Nathan left, tried at Southampton, albeit it was a failure, unfortunately. But Rob's, the job that he's done is unbelievable, because to come into a squad that is Nathan's squad, effectively, having come from the bitter rivals, you've got a couple of hurdles to jump straight away, and he's had to adapt the way that he wants to play, to be honest, to the squad that he's got to get the most out of them. And to do that and finish third in the league, I think he only lost 2 games in his time in charge. That's unbelievable. So hats off to him, but the club as a whole, it's just Streamland at the moment. You know, I think last year when we got to the playoffs, you're watching it and you think it might be the last chance you get at this, you know, with the budgets and everything that are attached to Luton Town. They're never going to be competing at the top with the West Broms and, you know, the Sunderlands, the Burnleys, whoever. So last year we thought it was going to be the only chance. Then this year they finished third. So they've shown that as a group of players, as a collective, they're worthy of their place. And you know, they've got one more step to go and until the Premier League. And it was a weird feeling the other night. I was watching the game and I said, I felt emotional because it's almost like watching your kid grow up and do something amazing. Because whilst I was there, it was good. We were on a success. And then I left when I think we were third in the championship, but I left after 6 games. But I don't think anyone would have expected us to keep that level. But to see him now, and like I say, last year, 6th place finish, 3rd place this year, it's incredible work from him.
Yeah, and Luton got a chance, Curtis. They really have. To win the game, though, they need to contain Victor Gyökeres. I really enjoyed the battle between McNair and Gyökeres over the 2 legs. As a centre half, you must have appreciated that was a tricky matchup for any defender. Obviously, Luton have got Lockyer, Osho, guys like that. How would you approach trying to handle Gyökeres? Because I think he is the most obvious match winner on the pitch.
I think Luton, the way that they defend with a back three and the way that they're quite compact, won't allow him as much space. I think they've got a reasonably quick back three. Obviously, not picking out Tom Lockyer, but in Amari Bell and Osho, I think they've both got pace that Gyökeres has got bundles of. And I think Gyökeres is a very good player in the fact that he has a little bit of everything in his game. If it needs to be hit to him, he's reasonably strong, can hold you off. He can run in behind. He can drop in and link the play. He's quite a clever player. He can take on a man. So he is a right handful. But that Luton Town team, I think the big thing is, as always, if you can stop him getting the ball and stop the service to him and retain the ball yourself, you've got a lot of a better chance. But I'm just interested for the final, and I think when it starts, because with all due respect, both teams are kind of, again, in dreamland, not maybe expecting to be one game away from the Premier League, particularly as a pairing. It would be very much a chess match early on, and teams will be feeling each other out just to see where they're at. But it only takes one magic moment, and then all of a sudden the game turns upside down, turns on its head. And I'm hoping that moment happens for Luton Town.
Yes, and just thinking as you're speaking, mate, timing's everything. Think of the amount of Super Sundays you could get on next season if it was to happen.
Oh, mate.
Monday night football, it's like it's time you run, my friend.
Well, I said the DAZN deal fell apart, didn't it? That to get all the EFL games, because I was just planning my run for 2024 when I could take that over.
That's very set. Do a year, yeah. Maybe yeah, a bit see, part thinking, Premier League this year.
Yeah, but perfect. What I'll do, yeah, if Luton gets the Premier League, it's perfect. Lots of Super Sundays. Probably pop over to India or Africa or something as the Premier League ambassador for Luton Town, you know. I've just planned it all out. As long as Leon Barnett and Kevin Foley don't get in my way, I've got a clear path to the promised land. But honestly, it is... As much as, you know, the love for the club and what we were as a group when I were there, and we would have backed ourselves against anyone on the day, if you'd honestly sat us all down in that room and said, could you get promoted or could Luton Town get promoted? We'd have said, that'd be a big, big ask. You know, the teams that are in that league. And then you think of the league this year, it's very similar. You know, you've seen Burnley and Sheffield United have gone up, but the teams still around it that didn't make it, you know, that have been kind of there or thereabouts all season. It's massive for the club and even for Coventry as well, because we keep talking about Luton, but Coventry's story is similar in the fact that, you know, nearly went out of business and all that kind of stuff, went all the way down to League Two and have made their way back as well. So it is the dream final for the people that love a bit of magic in football rather than the money teams as such. But yeah, obviously it's one game away, and it's mad to say that Luton Town could be a Premier League team.
Yeah, and it's too tight to call as well. Well, look, Curtis, we really appreciate your time today. Enjoy the game. And yeah, Sam's already messaged Richie Wellens for you, I'm sure. And we'll hope to see you down at Brisbane Road next
year. I'll be all over that.
All the best, James.
Curtis Davis there. What a man, eh? Clarkie, you saw Coventry over the two legs. You were at the Riverside for the second leg. They did a professional job. Mark Robbins has signed a four-year contract extension. Do you think that he has got the tactical nous to go one more time? It'd be such a story, wouldn't it, if he could get them from League Two through League One and then up into the Premier League over the course of his two spells. How impressed were you with them over the tie against Borough?
I was hugely impressed. It was a pretty intimidating atmosphere at the Riverside. It wasn't easy. You know, the fans were in 20 minutes before kickoff with the flags. There wasn't a spare seat. It was challenging, to say the least. And Borough started the game very brightly. But yeah, I was just really impressed. The spine of the team, the three centre-halves were outstanding. McFadden was, in particular, really stood out. Couldn't walk by the end, but he was brilliant. Gustavo Hamer, sensational in the middle of the park. You know, he was everywhere, wasn't he? And I think Mark Robbins tactically won the game, but by going with that box midfield.
He listened definitely to the pod last week, didn't he? Let's give yourself the props that you deserve.
Yeah, we both talked about it. He picked exactly the same team that I named, actually, which I was quite chuffed about. Maybe he's a listener, who knows? But it worked. It did work. And I think they deserved it. They just had that little bit more cutting edge. They didn't have much of the ball. We just pushed and pushed and created half chances throughout the tie. But whenever Coventry did attack, you felt there's a bit more thrust about them. And I think that was because of Gyökeres and because of Gustavo Hamer and maybe those little runs of Jamie Allen as well, which were a little bit unpredictable. So yeah, I think they played ever so well. And just in contrast with Michael Carrick, Robbins got the subs right. He got the team right. He got his subs right at the right times. Whereas Michael Carrick, and I don't want to dig him out, but I felt that he was a little bit too passive in the second leg in terms of trusting plan A, He left it and left it and left it. And I would have shaken things up and tried something different a bit earlier than he did. Matt Crooks came on, scored with his first touch. It was disallowed. I felt that he could have come into the fray a little bit sooner. But look, Michael and Burrell will come strong next year. I would imagine they will be certainly top six again.
Sam, give me a word on Burrell and Sunderland, please, the two beaten finalists. Clarkie's got Burrell pegged for top six. You feel like it's going to be harder for Sunderland, particularly if, as the rumours would suggest, they're going to let Tony Mowbray go. And also, you know, we've got Southampton down. We're going to talk about them a little bit later. We might have Leeds and Leicester, two massive clubs to battle with. So it's not nailed on, is it, that Sunderland and Burrell are going to be up there challenging again?
No, and you would anticipate Ipswich certainly probably doing better than just consolidating in the division next year. I think there'll be some people's fancy to go close again, dependent on what they do this summer. So no, it'll be tough. Sunderland, obviously, everyone's had their say on the speculation about Tony Mowbray. That would be incredibly harsh given what he's had to work with this year and the results that he's been able to produce. Obviously, have Ross Stewart back and a number of those injured lads will come back into the picture. So things are looking relatively rosy, although Diallo will have to be probably replaced. So I'm not sure they'll be able to match what they did this year. Middlesbrough, I'd be very confident of a very similar season, if not better. So yeah, probably more question marks about Sunderland right now. If Michael Carrick's there for the duration of another season, you do well to finish above Middlesbrough, I would say.
All right, well, it's Coventry Luton in the final then. I want a prediction from each of you, but Adrian, I want a specific one. You can't just say it will be tight and go to extra time. I'm talking full scoreline, please.
I thought you might do this. You might bring this on me. I agree with Curtis Davis, actually. Think it's going to be quite tight. Don't think it's going to be a goal fest. My hunch is that Coventry can grind it out. Coventry 1, Luton Town 0, either Hamer or Jokeres to get the winning goal. Because I just think they're the two most likely match winners. I love Luton. I think they've got a chance. It's a 50-50 game. But putting me on the spot, I think that one of those two might just make the difference. I do think that Coventry's back three are as capable as anyone of handling the Luton front two. And they're very, very good at defending set pieces as well, Sky Blues. So I'm going to give them the edge.
All right, Sam, I'm going Luton 2-1 AET. Any advance on that?
It's pretty much what I was going to say. So I'll give you a 1-0. 1-0 Luton, that's been my tip from the outset. So not going to change now. I can't disagree with anything Clarkie says. It's how their back three deal with Luton's two. Obviously, there's not going to be the turnovers that were presented to Coventry, especially at the Riverside, because Luton won't want to overdo things in terms of possession in the middle of the pitch. So that's pretty much why it's going to be tactically fascinating, because Luton will want to get forward to their two quite quickly as well. So that counter-attack threat won't be as evident, I don't think. Coventry deal with the set pieces really well. I think lowest number they've conceded this season. So that's something that Luton probably aren't going to get loads of joy from. I think out of the three finals, this could be the one to go to extra time and be won by a solitary goal.
Okay, we covered all bases there. Yeah, both league meetings finished all square, so expect a tight one at Wembley at the weekend. All right, loads more to come today. We'll look ahead to the League One final next. Laughing in the face of convention, the EFL have scheduled the playoff finals thusly. Championship on the Saturday, League Two on the Sunday, and League One on Bank Holiday Monday. We're not the freewheeling mavericks that Rick Parry and friends are, though, so we'll go logically and look ahead to the League One showpiece before we get to League Two. Barnsley booked their place under the arch by beating Bolton in their semi, but the story of the playoffs across all three leagues came at Hillsborough.
Can Jack Hunt deliver? Absolutely incredible.
and you really deserve it. I'm absolutely delighted with what we've had to come through this season. But listen, boys, we've got one more. Yeah. We've got one more. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So enjoy tonight, but we've got one more. But I'm so proud. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's something from all of us towards you. You've this last week, what you've done to change your mindsets, you, the staff, Tom Bates, has been unbelievable. Because not going to lie, there were some people doing it, but what you've showed us and the what you've put in and done for us this week has been second to none, and we've got to thank you and staff.
Clarkie, it's great to get these insights into the dressing room in the way we do these days, but that's a fine for Barry Bannon, isn't it? You can't be kissing the boss's backside like that in public and then it going across social media without getting some stick from the lad, surely.
Do you know what? I think if you're Barry Bannon, you can. I do. I don't know what Sam thinks. I think if it's a young lad chirping up that's not really done anything in the game, it says, thanks, Gaffer, it's all down to you. Like Peter Beale saying, what a busy so-and-so. But with Barry Bannon, I think he's got as much respect as the manager. What do you think, Sam?
I enjoyed his professionalism in that he spoke really well, despite people smashing him on the back and singing and chucking things at him. And he was still in his kit about an hour after the final whistle doing the local radio and such like. So I did think he spoke quite well. Yeah, there was a couple of things a little bit unnecessary in there. I didn't like the whole everyone wrote us off narrative. You were 4-0 down. Like historically, no one's ever overturned a three-goal deficit, I think it was. So that's going to happen, I'm afraid, chaps. But if they'd listened to this podcast, I knew it was going to be a thumping. Yeah. But it was in the hands of the gods a little bit that they were going to obviously get the 4 goals that they needed. But yeah, I mean, that's probably a natural thing to say a little bit. Everyone ridiculed us and such like, but I'm afraid that's the name of the game, guys. And that's why Darren Moore got stick at the full-time whistle. And that's why he's a god now. That's kind of football in the modern era, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it was Mick McCarthy, wasn't it? I think when he was Wolves manager, he said, when we lose, I'm a dog. And when we win, I'm a god, which is very Mick. So they're 4-0 winners after 90 minutes or 90 plus 8 as the goal goes in. Then Posh score in extra time. Wednesday pull it back to take it to pens. Jack Hunt bangs in the winning one. Clarkie, you were there. Where does this rank in terms of games that you've actually attended? Because it was extraordinary to watch. I imagine to be there was an out-of-body experience almost.
It was. I would rank it actually as the most exhilarating match I've ever co-commentated on in terms of the narrative and the drama. I mean, it's a last kick of the match equaliser to pull back a 4-0 deficit. It was extraordinary to be there. I wasn't even supposed to be there. That's the crazy thing. I did the Middlesbrough game. I stayed over and I got the call as I was just getting in my car in the morning. Can you go to Hillsborough? And I'm like, yeah, all right, then I'll do it. Yeah, I just hung out in Hillsborough. I didn't go home. I hung out in Sheffield all day, thinking it's a bit of a dead rubber, this one. We were only on the TalkSport app. And then as the goals went in, got to 3-0, suddenly it was, welcome along, TalkSport listeners. And basically, we carried it through on TalkSport. And it was just extraordinary, the drama. I got very excited. I was bigging up football as a sport. because it's, you know, this is the sort of sport that, you know, where miracles do happen. We've seen it in the past. And this was a miracle. And yeah, just the scenes around us with, you know, just absolute carnage, real noise at Hillsborough. And yeah, just the way they went about it, getting the early goal, getting the second by half time, push, without leaving themselves overexposure for Wednesday. They played it very sensibly. The third goal, an overlapping centre half, that's a bit of a trademark for Darren Moore. You know, makes the difference with Reece James. Then he goes, Aidan Flint, get up front, son. And obviously he's the guy that's there at the far post to nod it across goal for Liam Palmer, who was brilliant in a new central midfield position. And then extra time, they came again. So yeah, it was brilliant. I think I've been lucky enough to be at two of the most extraordinary matches of my life this season. One was Arsenal's comeback against Bournemouth, which was just amazing. And the scenes there I'll never forget. And this was very much the equal, if not exceeding it. It was amazing.
Well, Wednesday we'll be hoping that it's not as meaningless as that Arsenal victory. against Bournemouth turned out to be. How do you think Barnsley are feeling, Sam? Because, I mean, they're just an afterthought is not right. But they get a, you know, comparatively functional second leg 1-0 win against Bolton. Will they actually be quite pleased that the focus is not on them? And maybe thinking that Sheffield Wednesday, I know it's a long time between the games, but that's got to have taken a lot out of them physically and emotionally. Maybe that works in Barnsley's favour ahead of the final?
Yeah, I don't think the players will be giving it too much thought. But there is something in that the emotional energy that's been exposed already by the Wednesday lads will be interesting to see how they start the game, maybe. What Darren Moore, sorry to go back to Sheffield Wednesday, has got in his favour, maybe. It's not going to be the same team at Wembley. He can freshen it up a little bit. He can't start as attacking as he did that second leg, for sure. So there'll be a bit of freshness, I would say, about the Wednesday side. Barnsley have beaten Sheffield Wednesday twice. Let's not forget, they're the only team to win at Hillsborough. That does give you confidence, no doubt about it. So they can focus in on that. And they had two relatively comfortable legs as well. I mean, to limit Bolton, who beat Plymouth 4-0 at Wembley recently, who have been excellent consistently throughout this season, limit them to 3 shots on target in 180 minutes. It's testament to the way that they defended, the way the midfield in particular closed down that game, the way they marshalled Dion Charles. Don't think he had a touch in the box in the second leg. Had one early shot. 15 touches he had in the entirety of that game. That's a home side that are in complete control. And they've got, like some of these teams in the playoffs, they've got those lovely forward options, Barnsley. He rotates the front two, kind of calls upon them to go out there, the starters, and do the 60, 70 minutes, and then he can freshen it up with equally talented substitutes. So this is a good side, very much in the mould of Duff's Cheltenham side. You know, big onus on the wing-backs, excellent at set pieces. And as Clarkie touched on last week, this incredible record when they score first in matches, and that was evident again. Yeah, I mean, just finally for me on this, when are we, to contradict myself a little bit maybe, when are people going to stop making predictions before football matches, you know, being so adamant that this can't be overturned? You know, like, records are there to be beaten. We saw, I joked last week, we saw Barcelona do it, didn't we, a few years ago. We saw that massive goal swing with Forest a couple of years ago on the final day. Sorry, Matt. Bristol Rovers and Northampton last year. Nothing set in stone. And let me just reaffirm, Hillsborough, when the fans are in, that cop, it looks like it's in a different city. Those far corners, they look like, you know, little specks in the distance, the fans. That is an intimidating atmosphere. And unfortunately, if you cannot produce your best and be composed and use that talent that you've honed all through your youth in the big pressurised atmospheres, there's only going to be one outcome, and that's going to be a pummeling. And unfortunately, the Peterborough lads went under, and the Sheffield Wednesday staff, players, fans, all united, was just too powerful.
Yeah, no, they panicked a little bit, Peterborough. But as I said earlier, I think it was the willpower of Sheffield Wednesday, of the players, the belief of Darren Moore, and also the will of the fans that just overwhelmed Peterborough in the end. Going back to Barnsley, never in their history have they won more games in all competitions in a season than this season. They're 136 years old, Barnsley, and never before have they won 32 matches. So that in itself is something to celebrate. And I give them a real chance here. I was actually at the Barnsley Sheffield Wednesday game where they beat them 4-2. And my takeaway from it is that they won't have as much of the ball as Sheffield Wednesday, but they're really efficient when they go from back to front. And the key, and this will be the key to the game, it's Barnsley's pressing. Barnsley's pressing is phenomenal. You've almost got to be there to believe it. They are really intense, and they will get in the faces of Sheffield Wednesday at Wembley, and they'll force them long. And Wednesday might not be able to play the kind of football that they want to play. And going long is not a problem for Sheffield Wednesday. They've got a target man, centre forward. They can play from there. But Barry Bannon didn't get a kick, really, against Barnsley because they're on him. Luke O'Connell, the centre midfield guys, all of them, Phillips, Herbie Kane, they are fit and they are ferocious in the way they go after the ball. And I think that will be something that plays in their favour. I think Barnsley are marginal favourites for the game. I think it'll be a good game. I think there'll be goals from both teams, but think that Barnsley are a stylist, are the team that stylistically can trouble Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah, that's my take on it.
Well, Quinbet, don't agree with you. Barnsley 23-10 to win in the 90. Wednesday 6-5, 12-5 is the draw. Give me a prediction then, Clarky.
I'm going to go for Barnsley 2, Sheffield Wednesday 1. I think it'll be a good game. But as I said, think that Barnsley's will steal the ball in good areas and potentially hurt the Wednesday players, who I think might be a little bit emotionally drained from that crazy semi-final. So I'm going to lean towards the Tykes, but could go either way.
Are we talking 90 minutes here?
Yep.
Okay, Sam?
Yeah, I'm half changing my mind because of some of Clarkey's stuff there and, you know, thinking about those two victories, but I can't. I'm sticking with Sheffield Wednesday. I think there's enough space between the two games. I think they'll dust themselves down a little bit in the fashion of Sunderland last year. You know, when you felt Wickham could do a job in the one-off cup tie environment and Sunderland produced. I'm going to go for Sheffield Wednesday to produce something relatively convincing. Maybe, you know, race into a 2-0 lead, 2-1, 90 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to go 4-4 after 90 minutes. Sheffield Wednesday win on pens. 2-1 to Barnsley, by the way. 2-1 with Quinbet. 2-1 for Sheffield Wednesday, 17-2. No price for 4-4 because it's very unlikely to happen, but 66-1 if you want 3-0. Okay, we'll look ahead to the League Two playoff final next.
But then we recover tomorrow. Then we train. And it is total focus now, because I'm sick of losing at Wembley and I want to win there, okay? So let's get it right.
Suit us.
You wouldn't suit us. Why do anything different? We're going to win the game. So we do the normal things. Let's get our minds on it. We've got Stockport, so unfortunately you can't play, Ben, but you've just got us there. That's absolutely...
Sunday lunchtime is when the League Two playoff final goes down. It's between Carlisle United and Stockport County. Both book their place at Wembley in fittingly dramatic fashion. Sam, you were on the television on Saturday night predicting a tight final. They might cancel each other out, these two teams, you feel?
Final, yeah. Yeah, similar shapes. Very similar shapes. In fact, both pretty robust teams. Wingbacks that could very well cancel each other out in that final. I think that was a big strength of Stockport's in that recovery against Salford. You know, the ball's in from wide. I think they didn't really learn Salford that Rydell, especially on the left hand side, you can't allow him to keep pinging balls into the box, whipping balls in. Otherwise, there's only going to be one outcome, as it was when Alafe turned up and steered in a brilliant header. So yeah, I don't think there's much between these two at all. Going into this final, I was really impressed with Carlisle over the two legs. Barring the first 45 minutes at Bradford, I thought they made the better chances in the second half. I thought there was a real purple patch in the first half at Brunton Park, and thought a lot of that was down to Gordon, the Crystal Palace loanee, who Paul Simpson chucked in again like he did before the first leg, and he's done in the latter weeks of the season, just mixing up his front two to really good effect. I mean, penny for the thoughts of Christian Dennis, 21 goals in all competitions, didn't get off the bench in the second leg, and no one else has scored more than 6 goals. So I was really complimentary about Paul Simpson last week, and again, you know, absolute credit to him for making some big decisions before these games. And they got through and were worthy winners. And I think Stockport were my fancy, but, you know, quite fortunate, I think, to get through. And I thought the big turning point, as I said on the telly, was that reintroduction of some really important players for them. We know the calibre of Sasevic. Collins had a really good season. The other one, Crowsdale, I think, has been a regular feature as well. So I heard the noise. I was driving in actually on Saturday, and I heard those changes being made, and the upturn in the noise and the atmosphere at Edgeley Park was really evident to me just in the car listening on the wireless. So I think that inspired the players to go on. He changed Dave Challoner to it looked like a 4-4-2 to me. So he took a centre half out and got more balls into the box. And I thought that was the big moment, even though extra time was a bit carnage, a bit end-to-end probably for both managers liking. I thought that was the big moment in the tie. Stockport looking more like themselves, and they go into the final now with a hell of a lot more options for Dave Challoner, especially in the forward areas. So I think that's the most intriguing thing, which two strikers, which forward-thinking midfield players both managers opt for at Wembley.
Adrian, that second leg between Carlisle and Bradford, take out the Sheffield Wednesday, Peterborough, that may be low-key actually the most exciting game. You know, maybe the closest game in terms of what happened, all the stuff that happened in extra time, etc. I kind of went into it thinking Bradford were favourites, which is odd because they both got exactly the same amount of points in the season. But really impressive, as Sam says, from Paul Simpson, because you look at, you know, the comparative budgets and where Carlisle were when Simpson took over. It's a really impressive achievement that he's managed.
Really impressive, yeah. Paul Simpson's definitely galvanised the whole town of Carlisle, or is it a city? I can't remember. I'm not going down that rabbit hole again. But then he's galvanised the place. And
definitely looked to see if it had a cathedral this season, haven't we? Sorry, Clark. We definitely looked to see if it had a cathedral, and I think it did. So go. I'm going city.
It's a cathedral city, you know, in an unparished area. So yeah.
Yeah, this is coming back to me now. So they galvanised the city. No, I was seriously impressed. I think that for three quarters of that tie, they were the better team. Obviously, the set pieces of Moxon have been gold all season long, and obviously it was another good ball in from him that made the difference. So yeah, I think they've got a really good chance here. Good wing backs again with Armour and Senior. Obviously they'll be up against strong wing backs from Stockport as well, but yeah, well played Carlisle United, and well done Simpsons for picking the right front two. I had a massive issue, I don't know how you felt about this, Matt, with ITV. And with the three letters that you use for each team, obviously with Bradford it was BRA as you would, but for Carlisle, CUT. What are they thinking?
Yeah, because you can just have car, and that's funny anyway because it's like a car. I mean,
it was really poor on that score. But no, Carlisle, I've got a good chance here. I would say that Carlisle, in terms of playoff form, you would make them favourites. That they're playing better than Stockport, who are obviously rushing back players for the playoffs that are maybe not fully fit.
Clarkie, who did it worse penalty-wise, Matty Lund or Chris Waddle?
it was a bad one, wasn't it? It was a bad one. Waddle's was worse. His was absolutely shocking, wasn't it? But Matty Lund wasn't great. And it was a shame. Yeah, look, Salford aren't a club that are easy to feel sorry for because of the ownership, but I think that they were really unlucky to miss out because I think they played better than Stockport over the two legs.
Sam, do you get inspiration to maybe work on your guns a bit, looking at Big Ben Hinchcliffe and his massive arms and tattoos and how that helps Stockport in the shootout?
Sorry to do this, mate, but it's Hinchcliffe because I've been corrected by an unhappy Stockport fan very early on Sunday morning. I think I butchered his name on the telly, mate, so Hinchcliffe it is.
Okay. Hinchcliffe, shouldn't it?
I said consistently throughout the afternoon, doesn't look like a goalkeeper. Is it the short sleeves?
No, does he? Looks
is
like
it
a
the
bouncer.
Tattoo? What is it? He does not look like a goalkeeper. But yeah, I credit him. I said it a little bit. There's enormous pressure on every single person that takes a penalty. Like, the pressure, in my opinion, didn't get to Salford. It's just, it's a horrible situation for all the lads. The goalkeepers so often prosper in that situation because they don't seem to feel that pressure. They, you know, it's an act that they do all the time, isn't it? You know, in training, saving shots. Some of those lads, Mariappa in particular, I'm not having my centre half taking the second penalty. That's a criticism probably I can direct towards Salford. But I haven't got a problem with anyone dinking it, stuttering. If you can do that in that pressure, you fill your boots. And I hate that kind of statement that gets thrown at it. You know, you got to put your foot through it. No, I totally agree with don't change your mind. I was I would decide very early on in the week, leading into a playoff game or a cup game, I'm going to side foot it or I'm going to ping it or whatever. You should never change in your run up there, because I think that's quite easy to do. And I think that can be really costly. If your stock penalty is a strong side foot it. But yeah, I never have a go at someone for dinking it. John Bostock did it in the National League final the other day and hit the bar, but he's, I think, scored 7 of 8 or something doing it in that fashion. So there's no such thing as a right way to take a penalty, in my opinion. But the keeper did amazing, and I didn't realise what a story it was. He's been promoted twice with Stockport, record appearance holder for a goalkeeper, and he's actually got previous 4 Dave Challoner at Fylde when he, I think, saved and scored in a shootout. So he was asked after the game if he could if he wanted one, and said he did, but Dave Challoner said, "You're 11th, son." So he was disappointed, but ended the hero from what he did as a shot stopper.
Yeah, I like my goalies to have character and personality. He's definitely got that, hasn't he? It should never have gone to penalties, by the way. That goal should have been disallowed from Stockport.
High foot.
Foul throw.
Oh.
I looked at it at the time and I thought, hang on a minute. It looked like he was on the pitch there. So I paused it. Yeah, both feet way over the line for that long throw, but no one picked up on it, and bang, there you go.
All right, odds-wise, Carlisle 21-10, the draw 9-4, and Stockport 27-20 with Quinn Beck. Give me a prediction then, Adrian.
I find this pretty tough, actually. I think this one might go to extra time. I'm going to go for... actually, might even go all the way. I'm going to say this is 1-1 after extra time. It goes to pens, and this time, Hinchliffe isn't the hero. I'm going to go for Carlisle United on penalties.
Wow. Okay. Sam, what about you?
I'm going with a team that I fancied again from the start, Stockport. Again, you can make a really good case for Carlisle. I think the point Clarkie made earlier is a really pertinent one. They are in better rhythm at the moment, I would say. Those performances were a little bit disjointed from Stockport, but I will just go for the pure fact that they've had, you know, a better last quarter of the season, if you like, the best, I think, in League Two. And with the reintroduction of the forward players, the midfield creators in particular, I think they've probably got a better 11 than Carlisle. And I'm hoping, for my sake, that comes to the fore on Sunday.
Okay, I'll go 1-0 Carlisle.
Right. Across all of these playoff predictions, we're all sort of disagreeing, and you know, and it goes to show that they're all wide open games. I don't think there's a clear favourite in any of them.
Nope, I'd agree with you there. All right, it's a big old pod today, but we're going to round up some news next. So it looks like, and this might well have happened by the time you hear this, listener, Russell Martin is going to be the new Southampton manager. Interesting one this, Adrian. We know Swansea have got various off-field issues, but this is a risk for him, isn't it? Lots of criticism about how things have gone internally under the Saints' new owners, so it might be a frying pan fire situation.
I would agree. I think this is a risk for Southampton as well. Southampton will be expected to go straight back up. There'll be, you know, high demands, a little bit like a Watford coming down. If there's a poor start to the campaign, they'll make a change. And Russell Martin's teams are streaky. They go on long unbeaten runs, but they also go on long winless runs. And I'm yet to... Well, the facts bear this out. Russell Martin is yet to prove he's a winning manager. He's a brilliant philosophy guy. His teams play beautiful football, and I love his coaching style. I would love to play for Russell Martin. I think he would be a joy to be in the dressing room with. But he's not won anything yet. He's not come close to winning anything yet. And I think that this is a risk for Southampton and a risk for him, because if it doesn't start well, that they'll bin him off like they did Nathan Jones.
Sam, Cardiff City stayed up by the skin of their teeth. The club screaming out for some consistency. So they've let Sabri Lamouchi go, the guy who just kept them up. This is maybe I'm just being biased because I love the guy, but this is a strange one for me. It's a club that's been circling the drain for a couple of years. Surely you're better off keeping somebody who knows the league and has proven to be capable of doing well in it.
You would think so, yeah. I think the problem there is probably the attacking talent that he's got at his disposal. I think that needs probably improved. We know he's a pretty good coach in setting up a team, and defensively, I would see that as one of his strengths. And it tailed off a little bit after I'd seen him actually in his infancy in the role, and I was quite impressed with the alterations he'd made early. They didn't make huge improvements, but yeah, with Cardiff, I think that's been a bit of a mess for a number of years now. And I felt that there was a bit of a shift definitely last summer, the tail end of the previous season, to become a more footballing side. I think those waters have been muddied with the subsequent appointments. Where they are now, I don't really know. So that'll be interesting to see who comes in and if it is with the instruction to make them more easy on the eye, maybe like they're more not so near neighbours, but Swansea down the M4. So, yeah, surprised, because I think he's a good coach and I think he'd probably continue to be a pretty good fit for that club at the moment.
One that passed us by, Adrian, and I think passed a lot of people by because it is the very definition of meh, I would say. Valerian Ismail in at Watford. We wish him well for his 6 games in charge, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, this is just so Watford, isn't it?
It's so Watford. Look, we're right across the EFL, right? I only saw this at the weekend. Like, how did this happen? I was commentating with John Anderson, who's a big, big Watford fan. He said, what do you think of Ismail coming in? I'm like, what? It's completely passing by. I mean, Watford fans are going to hate it, aren't they? They're going to absolutely hate it. He has to win. He has to be winning most matches, most weeks. For the Vicarage Road faithful to stick with him, they've got to be top two. If they're not, they'll get rid of him. So I think probably a poor appointment.
Blimey. What about Matt Sadler at Walsall, Sam? You know him. Tell us a bit more. He was interim. He's been on the coaching staff for a while, ex-Walsall player. Do you think he's going to help turn the Sadlers around?
I think it's a tough job, Walsall first and foremost. I thought that there seemed to be some light, really, at the end of a long, dark tunnel when Michael Flynn got the role and started quite brightly, but it was a bit of a disaster, in truth. I saw them towards the tail end of the season. I wasn't impressed at all. I think Matt's been coaching. He's been in charge of the set pieces as well. So I'd imagine that will be his strong suit. He was an organiser, incredibly professional, heart on his sleeve. A lot of the things I probably said about John Eustace actually is relevant here. They're mates. They were together at Watford when I got to know the pair of them. Incredibly professional, Matt. He'll be really diligent. Deserves his opportunities, the type of character that should be a manager. So I'm really pleased for him. He had that kind of renaissance at Shrewsbury towards the end of his career prior to going to Walsall, where he was an incredible leader, incredible player for them. So I wish him well. I think it is a tough role, but he's got all the characteristics to be a success as a manager. Lovely man. I know he's desperate to come on the pod and tell the anecdote about when he stayed in my house with John Eustace for a few weeks and nicked a few pairs of my pants. That's the top quality stuff you can look forward to next season, listeners. So, yeah, he's just a brilliant type. Do you know what I mean? And I would imagine he could do a similar job to what John Eustace has done down the road in terms of stabilising and giving a bit of hope. Got a win on the last day of the season. I knew his hat was in the ring and absolutely thrilled to see him get it because he's an absolute pleasure.
There you go, listener. If the prospect of somebody managing in League Two telling you about stealing some of Sam's pants doesn't convince you to subscribe, I'm not sure what will. A couple of crisis clubs in the EFL. Wigan's woes continue. They'll start life in League One on -4 points after being hit with a deduction for failing to play their players on time. There's another one looming over their heads as well if they don't get the money to the players by the end of this month as well. And Fleetwood Town, their owner Andy Pilley, likely to face jail time after being convicted of fraud. A club statement said Fleetwood acknowledged the verdict in the court case involving Andy Pilley. The chairman would like to reassure supporters the club will continue to operate as normal. Whether you're going to take the word of a man who's just been convicted for fraud at face value, that's up to you. Doesn't sound ideal to me, though. All right, before we go, I do have a tweet of the week, which I will get the chaps to run the rule of. This is a variation on a theme. It comes from Helen Skelton, the television presenter, who has quote tweeted a picture of the Carlisle celebrations on the pitch from somebody whose battery is very low, if you have a look at the picture. Beyond proud and excited for my brother and his fam, his colleagues, my parents, and all at official CUFC. You never get immune to the irrational nature of sports. Wembley bound, heart emoji, heart eyes emoji, hashtag proud, hashtag thanks for the memories. It turns out that Gavin, her brother, is the Carlisle first team coach. So this is a first for us, Sam. It's a celebrity congratulating a family member on something that's happened in football. How's Helen done here for you?
Yeah, I quite like it. I'm familiar with the Skelton family tree. I was very aware of Gavin's work, and I knew that it was his sister, Helen. I want to be careful, because if there ever comes an opportunity to canoe the Amazon with Helen, as she did once upon a time, I'm all for that type of caper. I know they're both from Carlisle, and I know that Gavin has been around the club for a number of years, whether it been in a coaching capacity or working for the local radio. I've heard him on that numerous times. So I feel the power of that tweet and the nature of it. I think good luck to them. Enjoy Wembley.
Touch of class from Gabby Logan as well, Clarkie, I thought, to be the first to comment on it. Congratulations. Two praise emojis. Doesn't get better than that.
Since I've seen that, I've been trying to rack my brains as to who Gabby would support. Is it Newcastle? Is it Leeds? I'd say Leeds.
Dad was big Leeds.
I think it's Leeds, but she loves her sport, doesn't she? Yeah, straight on it. It's the line, you never get immune to the irrational nature of sport, that sort of stands out for me. It's not a line we've had on Tweet of the Week this season. It's quite deep. You know, you could probably write a 5,000 words essay, couldn't you, on that, if you were doing a degree in philosophy. So, well done, Helen. So it's thought-provoking.
I enjoy Clarkey saying Gabby Logan loves her sport there. I thought he was going to say she loves playoff League Two second leagues.
We all do, don't we? We don't need to say that.
Can't beat Carlisle Bradford on a Saturday tea time.
What we do need to say, Adrian, is how people can keep up with us on social media. So tell them, please.
Yeah, on Instagram and Twitter, it's at WhatTheEFL. Yeah, the follower account is growing. We'll try and put a bit more content on there throughout the summer. I'm not sure what yet, but we'll try. And on Twitter, it's at EFLWhatThe. So it's a little bit backwards. But please do give us a follow. And if you like the pod, please share any links to it and get word out there. Look, the figures have been great towards the end of the season. We've never had more people listening, but you know, there's still stacks of people that don't know this pod exists. So let's get word out there.
Yep, let's do it. And a reminder before we go of the offer from our friends at Quinbet, who've enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It's 18 plus. And remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, we're going to be back next week when we will round up those playoff finals for you, talk you through the ecstasy and the agony, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of other news for us to round up as well. Join us for that if you can. For now, though, it's goodbye.